tonight. Work session on House Bill 2237, 2658, 1050, and 1048.
Getting that in the circuit court. But we reviewed by the circuit court, of course, has resulted in these many different opinions based on wherever the judicial district happens to be. Some of whom, and some of the judges, have very little knowledge of workers' compensation system and are second-guessing the workers' compensation board by substituting their judgment for evidence. Therefore, instead of a three-member board representing the interest of labor, management, and the public, a single judge may make his evaluation of the facts. The system cannot bear the inconsistency and delay caused by the circuit courts taking a fourth look at the evidence. Talked to an attorney friend of mine, has a case dated back to 1974, is still in the process of litigation. And this man could have been, could have gone through vocational rehab, the center at Wilsonville. He could have been back on the job, and yet it's still in litigation, tied up in circuit court. By abolishing the circuit court review, we have no intention of depriving the parties of judicial review on matters of law. Senate Bill 1050 provides that the Court of Appeals will review determination of the board on the grounds of substantial evidence and errors of law. This change is consistent with the review exercised by the Court of Appeals in reviewing the decisions of other administrative bodies. This is a matter that concerns me the most as far as this package is concerned. I said on the floor of the Senate, I say it again to this committee, if I thought that one member or one injured working man did receive his just dues as a result of the treatment he'd receive under the Workman's Compensation Board and through this system, I would have been the first to oppose the bill. But I think they can interpret the law, and I know of no hearing officer that would not render a fair decision as far as an injured workman is concerned here in the state of Oregon. I believe I know them all. And I think this is true of the Workman's Compensation Board. I have questioned them regarding that very point before our committee to make sure. I says, are anyone here, do you feel that an injured workman would receive a fair hearing under the, and through the appeal under the Workman's Compensation Board? Without question, those that were, the answer was yes. So what I say is that the system cannot bear the cost of these delays caused by the circuit courts taking a fourth look at the evidence. So I would hope, and this is my greatest concern, that you're going to have the pressure, and I know you're going to have a lot of heat on here. We had it on the other side. But I feel that I'm right. I think that I have shown, displayed as much interest in these injured workmen as any member of the committee, and then I know there are all of you, a number here, that are great friends of labor. I thought the injured workmen would not receive a fair deal. With the elimination of the circuit court, I wouldn't have supported this bill. Now, I've also served notice. You'll be a member of the Interim Committee on Labor. We're going to watch it, and I'm sure that there will be a number of members of this committee that will also be on this Interim Committee. We're going to watch it very closely. I will spend most of my time, or a great deal of my time, trying to see how the system, and getting the system to work, the doctors, there needs to be a cooperation between the doctors, the insurance company, the WCB. We have many problems that have to be ironed out. And I intend to spend a great deal of time during this interim period doing just that. With this, I will close, Mr. Chairman, and I just wanted this opportunity to express my concerns before this committee.
Senator, I want you to know one thing, that I've known you for a number of years, and I am somewhat sensitive to the fact that people will make the allegation that you're not doing something in the best interest of the working people, and that you were doing it intentionally. Because, you know, it's interesting, I think there's a lot of things been said about Dick Groner, but I even think the opponents, the people who have been here in the legislative process, will tell you they don't think that Dick Groner has ever done anything that he didn't believe was in the best interest of the working people of the state.
Right.
I know I believe that very strongly.
But I think that my feeling and my strong feeling is that this session should be one of cooperation between labor and management. We have many areas, and we better start talking about jobs, because the cost of workman's compensation. I'd just like to, for the benefit of the committee, I have a neighbor, 65 years of age, whom I've known for many years, has been a friend of my family's for many, many years, since I was a youngster in Oregon City, living in Oregon City. He's a contract logger. Every morning I hear his pickup that I'm awake, I hear his pickup truck goes by around 5 o'clock. And he's home after dark. He drives about 60, 75 miles up in the mountains of National Forest. He's home after dark. Saturdays and Sundays, he's up there repairing and maintaining his equipment. I had his insurance business for quite a few years, and I know that he had a difficult time paying his premium. His premium was quite high. His rate for workman's compensation is $32.13 a hundred. You know, that takes a big chunk out of him. He's actually, I think that the men who are working for him make more money than Ernie Isaac is the person I'm alluding to. So these are things, you know, because I think we got the idea that all employers are fat, and this is not true. There's many thousands of small employers like this in the state of Oregon who are working and providing jobs that have their back to the wall, and I think the committee's got to think of them, and I think we as people that are working in the interest of the public got to take this into consideration. I think we have a good package here. We've tried to increase, we've increased the benefits. We haven't decreased the benefits, but we've tightened up and tried to make sure that those that need to be compensated justly will be compensated justly, and those that are still working on a permanent total, they shouldn't be. I think we've taken care of this problem too by having an opportunity to look at their tax records.
Senator, you know, I don't want anyone to think it's a prearranged conversation between us, but the fact is that Senator Garland and I have very, very many similar beliefs about labor and the role it plays. And you know, I think, Senator, that you are well aware that the most of us that are more concerned about the big picture instead of our own special interest, and we all have them, but those who are looking at the state as a whole in the future recognize that I think that economic diversification is the number one critical issue facing the state of Oregon in the next 25 years. And we have to look at, because the timber industry cannot continue to support our economic base. And I want you to know that the governor, when he went to Germany to look at that computer factory, he informed me that when he went in to the meeting, the first meeting, and sat down, and before anyone said one word, introductions or anything, the person looked across at him and said, "You know, Governor, you've got the highest workers' compensation rates of any state in the United States." And that's where the conversation started, and that's where it ended. And I'm very concerned about that type of an attitude, and we have to have a much broader perspective than our own individual little interest in preserving our own little bailiwicks.
And I would hope that my friends in labor, our friends in labor, would recognize that if they want to talk about jobs and membership, the construction industry, especially those in the construction industry, where it's about 25 to 30% unemployed, and if we want jobs here, there are California, Washington contractors coming here, taking jobs of Oregon working men, because they're paying Washington rates, which are half, and you have access and have seen what the rates are, sometimes a third of what they are here in the state of Oregon. So we're a distinct advantage in the neighboring states where they can come in contract loggers and log here. Well, anyhow, I don't want to take all your time.
Well, I'm glad you came over.
But I appreciate your courtesy.
Thank you very much.
And this is how I feel.
Thank you, sir. Mr., I was going to open the hearing to House Bill 2237 because...
Senate Bill 1050. The work session? What is that bill? What I like to do.
Here we go.
Jack up the title. Here we go.
You tell me if you didn't have it well.
I didn't have it.
That's your turkey. You got the one you brought down from your office.
Oh, there's some more out here, too.
You probably got mine.
Hmm?
Oh, you don't.
Oh,
you don't. It was under the car. My face is red. I'm sorry.
It didn't make any difference. How did I not get enough coffee for that?
Information from both the parties that were in disagreement, and I guess that the trial lawyers and Bob Kennedy are on one side, and AOI and AGC, some other folks are on the other side, and neither one of them has supported their particular position with data about what the problem is here in the middle. And I think we're all agreed on eliminating some steps in this. There are too many steps in it. And one thing that we need to do to start with, I think right at the beginning, is to beef up the field service coordinator part of the board so that if there is an injury that requires hospitalization, there should be a requirement of an immediate notification to some central place to contact the field service coordinator. And this report should be made by one of two people, either the employer, who should have knowledge that this hospitalization has occurred, and this is not always practical that they would know, or to a doctor, the attending physician, who has admitted that workman to the hospital.
Okay, Bill, your first concern is answered. There's a bill right now that we've been working on down in Ways and Means.
It doesn't, my concern isn't answered, and that does it. Says 30 days, and I think that 30 hours would be more appropriate. I'm talking about immediate.
Conceptually, I agree with you.
Okay. And so this is a thing that has been identified to us for quite a long period of time as being one of the problems. If we've got someone who is a representative from the board itself or as a part of the board who is going to get in and help this individual, help this individual's family, we need to get him in there before the man becomes bitter and unhappy with the world. Now, take it to one more step. If this injury has the appearance of being permanent in the discretion of this field service coordinator, then the field service coordinator should, at that time, and that should be very quick involved in. Because the man will probably require their services. Again, I'm talking about quickly, not 30 days, not 6 months, or not when he's medically stationary, but while he's still in the hospital, if need be. Okay, so that's two parts right there at the very bottom end of the scale when the injury occurs that I think would enhance the situation with the workman. Do two things. One, it'll start him on the road to going back into a productive activity, if it is at all possible. And the other thing is he is not going to feel that he's being hit. I think the psychology that's involved here is very important. Now, when it comes to the point where he has gotten into the evaluation phase of it, now we're starting the first part of going up the process. And when he comes into this part of it, closing an evaluation, based on what I can find out, basically the evaluator never sees the individual, never talks to the injured workman. He looks at paperwork and reports, and that's the extent of it. Now, somehow, he should have better information. Now, if service coordinator is doing his job properly, that could be a source of better information. Or perhaps there should be a face-to-face meeting with the injured workman by the evaluator so that he can go through through all the material that he has and see that he has everything that should be available. Now when the closing is made and the determination is made by this evaluator, if the injured workman is dissatisfied at this point, then of course his next step is to appeal, and that would be then to the referee. Now, I'm going through the statutes. Finally, I think there are probably two classes of people that have better job security than referees. One is a federal judge, and the other is a professor with tenure.
I thought you were going to say an Air Force major.
No, they're very insecure.
The people they retire.
Right. These people are very well protected statutorily. If the right people have been selected, and of course that's a problem, but if the right people have been selected, they have the security where they do not have to bend to political pressures or anything else. They are a judge in that situation. Now, we talked about taking out steps and where we're going to take the steps out.
Anita, could you get a bite?
My suggestion from the first step then to take out of this is to take the board out and make the first appeal from the referee into the circuit court, not de novo, but on substantial evidence. Now, this is a considerable difference between what's done now. I'm convinced that they're on an appeal, that it's much quicker to get an appeal into the circuit court than into the court of appeals, and less expensive. So if the circuit court is to be retained, it should the appeal there should be on the basis of substantial evidence and not de novo. Now then, coming on to the next step of the appeal, in other legislation in this session, a number of appeals that now go to the Supreme Court will be going to the Court of Appeals, and in looking at the number of appeals that are taken now from the board to the circuit court, if we assume the same number of appeals might be there, and we have no way of knowing, there'd be a total overloading of the Court of Appeals. and it would just jam things up. So this is another reason for having a circuit court step in there, because of the more availability. And then the appeal, of course, from the circuit court would be to the Supreme Court.
Directly
to the Supreme Court. Now, I think that covers this avenue. This may be a terrible suggestion. And
so would the appeal from the circuit court to the Supreme Court be on the substantial evidence also?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Then, because looking at this data that the Workman's Comp Board has given to us, and this is, you've got a figure to look at as any, as in going through the orders and how they are appealed, and I realize that these do not pertain to the same orders. This is not the same set of orders that are progressing through, so it's faulty in that respect. The hearing officer reverses the evaluations division approximately 80% of the time. We've been given some good reasons for why that happens. Then going on, the board affirms the hearing officer 80% of the time. Going on up, the circuit court affirms the board 71% of the time, and so on. I don't see any big breakdown that we've been told about why the circuit court is so bad. And on the other hand, I don't see that the board is so bad if we look at these figures. Okay.
Could I, if you get some pencil, I just received today a breakout that was done this year on the fiscal year 75-76 on a report on circuit court judgments of board orders in the workman's comp. And these are the figures that they have. Total cases appealed to the circuit court from the board, 364. Now those are filings. Those are filings of appeals, and you have to watch that figure. Circuit court judgments reported, 298. Now what that means is the difference between 364 and 298 were settlements prior to having the court issue a ruling. The breakdown of the 298 judgments reported is as follows. Affirmed the board order 191 times. Increased the award granted by the board 58 times. Other judgments by the circuit court 49 times. Now I'm going to break down that other judgment for you. The breakdown of the other judgments. Now, they have two different claims in here. They've got they have involved in this are denials, which means that the claim was not denied by the insurer, and they also have disability claims. But of that 49, 11 of them had to do with accepting a claim. In other words, that it appears that the board had denied acceptance, and the circuit court in 11 cases said the claim should have been accepted.
So they were in effect affirming the hearing or the referee.
Well, whatever the referee was doing, I don't have that. But in essence, I take this would have been a reversal of the board in that they said that you should have accepted that claim. There were two cases in which there was a stipulated settlement. There were 22 cases in which there was a remand claim. Now I'll get to that later. There were two cases in which they decreased the award. There were four cases in which they said the board should have denied the claim. In other words, the board said that it was a compensable injury, and the circuit court said it was not. And there were eight cases in which they dismissed the claim. And I take it that that's an affirmation of the board.
What was the percentage?
percentage, 191 cases would be of the total?
64% were affirmed. Now, here's some other data. Of the 191 affirmation judgments, attorney fees on only 57 cases were reported. The average fee for the 57 was $439. Of the 58 cases receiving increases at the circuit court level, 45 of them involved increases to permanent partial disability awards.
How many?
45 of them were increases to permanent partial awards. The average dollar increase was $3,307. The largest increase was $11,200. The average attorney fee of those 45 cases was $718. The highest attorney fee was $1,500. Now, attorney fees for other judgments were available for only 22 of the 49 cases. However, the average of these cases was $1,280 per case. High was one case where a fee of $5,000 was allowed, and three other cases where fees of $2,500 each were allowed.
This would indicate that in the other judgments, the fees were higher.
No, lower. I think what they did is that they took the 5,000 was the highest, and then they went down to the next three cases, which were highest, were three cases of 2,500 and below. Now, just for general information, the circuit court handling the largest number of the 298 reported judgments were as follows. Judge Allen in Lane County with 32 cases. Judge Beatty in Portland with 15 cases. Judges Dale, Jones, Lent, and Salmonetti in Multnomah County, 14 cases each. And Judges Ellis, Murchison, are they both Portland? Ellis and Murchison, Portland, 13 cases each. Yes, Gary.
The increased awards, difference between 35 and 58. 58 increased awards, 45 of them being increases in permanent partial. Does that mean the other 13 were changed to permanent total?
Yes. Exactly what they were. Do you want those statistics?
Well, we changed the permanent totals from permanent partial.
I can give you what they were if you want.
Just for kicks, yeah.
Okay. There were 13 of the 58 increased awards were permanent total disability. The consequences of the orders in these 13 cases is as follows. The hearing referee in case one gave 160 degrees. The board affirmed the hearing referee, and the circuit court granted permanent total disability. In the second case, the hearing referee gave 208 degrees. It was affirmed by the board, and the circuit court permanent total. The third case was 218. That was affirmed by the board, 218 degrees. That was affirmed by the board, and the circuit court said permanent total. The next case, the hearing referee said permanent total disability. The board said zero, and the circuit court reinserted the board's order, the hearing examiner's order, and reversed the board. The next case was 192 degrees by the hearing referee. It was affirmed by the board, and the circuit court said permanent total. The next case was a denial by the hearing examiner. It was affirmed by the board, and the circuit court said permanent total. The next case was a hearing examiner said permanent total. The board said 256 degrees, and the circuit court said permanent total. The hearing second referee in the next case said 171.6 degrees. The board said 210, and the circuit court said permanent total. The next case, the hearing examiner said permanent total. The board said 240, and the circuit court said permanent total. The next case, the examiner said 144 degrees. The board affirmed the hearing examiner, and the court, circuit court said permanent total. The next case, the hearing referee said permanent total. The board said 192 degrees, and the circuit court said permanent total. The next case, the hearing referee said 120 degrees. The board affirmed the hearing referee, and the circuit court said permanent total. The next case, the last one, the hearing referee said permanent total. The board said 30 degrees, and the circuit court inserted the referee's decision and said permanent total.
You got the attorney fees on those?
No, I don't have that broken down. I have no idea on that.
Can we get copies of
that? I just got that today, and I will make sure that all attorney members have copies of that.
Okay, Mr. Chairman.
Yes, Bill.
Does that indicate by any disposition of those into the appeals court?
There were 51. That's all I know.
51 of which number?
64. Of the 298, the window judgment.
Of the 298,
yeah,
51.
I have not been able to determine yet if those were appealed by the employer or the insurance or the insured, or whether in fact that they were the claimants. I can't tell that. Do you know? The 298.
Oh, I don't know.
No, that's what I said. I don't know who they were.
Mr. Chairman, I want to answer a question that Representative Wilhelm asked. He said, what was the attorney fees on those? It does have the average of those that were affirmed, of the 58 that were affirmed, and this was only 13 of those 58, but the average of those 58 was $718.
All of those averages.
Well, that's a fees. That isn't a fees. I don't have it. See, these?
I see.
These
okay,
are
that's out 45.
I have no idea what the
difference was.
Max for attorney fees in to go to the circuit court would be about $2,600 if you draw a permanent total away. You just don't have to draw taxes until you live long enough to get to the point where $2,600 was 25% or whatever. You had lived long enough to draw.
Okay.
Could you get us a figure on that? Would you compute that out for us, just for the committee, on how that's determined so the committee understands on the permanent total?
Mm-hmm.
When there's a permanent total award from the circuit court or any place, how the attorney fees are figured?
Well, 25% is the increase the work managed by the, or secured by the attorney services to a maximum. First, at the referee's level, max is 2,000, and you go to the board and and get an increase, you can go to a max of 2,300. If you enter the circuit court, it's 2,600 or 2,650, something in that area. Max, if you secure a large amount of increase, 25% of that increase would be 2,600 or more.
Okay.
I have adopted the attorney rules here.
Could you leave that with the committee? Could you get all copies of that for the committee members?
Yeah.
Okay, go ahead.
Bill.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman.
Yes.
While we're on that subject, not to beat the attorney fee thing to death, but now these are only the cases that are appealed from the board forward, right?
No, this is a circuit court.
This is a circuit court, okay. Can we get the same kind of statistics? Not as detailed, because you've got a lot of detail there. But that would go through the hearings process and through the appeal to the board.
Norm, did you hear his question?
No.
Why don't you come on up here? Please.
He's coming up, Mr. Chairman. What's the total number of degrees? What constitutes permanent total?
320.
320.
I'm sorry, that's not correct. That is a classification in itself.
Yeah.
Permanent total. And you can get up to
in a permanent partial disability award of 320 degrees.
Permanent partial is a max of 320. Yeah. Permanent total is simply a payment of so many dollars a month for life.
Yeah.
Or while your condition remains.
But under permanent partial, 320 is the
set figure, yeah.
Norm, dare I ask your question?
All right, for the record, my name is Norman Kelly. I'm up counsel of the Workman's Comp Board.
Yeah, my question is simply if we could get the same kind of general statistics. Totals, not an average, is not the specific, as much specific information as Ted's got on this. For those cases that go to a hearing and then to the board.
I would suspect, with respect to these particular orders, we could, yes, because inherently we've got that information. Beyond that, I don't know. If you're talking, you know, we've got 364 cases totally that went to the circuit court. I suppose we would have records on those available in the board for all of them.
For these 364 cases?
Yeah. I don't know how soon we can get
it. But you can't. You don't have the ability to tell us how many, with the disposition of the cases by number, were out of the at the hearings level.
I think we could.
At the board level, and what the attorney fees and so on would be.
Yeah, it takes a little time, but I think we could get it, yeah.
These attorney fees that are listed here now, like this $439 average for the 191 that were, where the board's position was affirmed, for example, is that $439 average just for the action in circuit court? Or is that the $439? Does that take care of the attorney's fees through the hearings process and through the appeal through the board, and then also the activity in the circuit court?
I don't know. I didn't have any part in preparing this particular set of statistics, but I really don't know.
Ted, what do you think?
That sounds a little low to me.
Mm-hmm.
Sounds a little low to me.
See what happened. I think it's only on the.
What
appeared to me would be the appeal at the circuit court level, and they only had 57 of the 191, and I have no idea. I think it's low myself.
Well, but I mean, but that's just the fee for the activity that went on at the circuit court level. It doesn't include any of the activity that would have went on prior to that.
No, I think it has to include that. I think that was the attorney fee awarded in that case.
Well, that would include everything from the hearing, the appeals to the board.
If you affirm the order at the circuit court level, the attorney hasn't earned any fee for his services there because he was not instrumental in seeking or securing an increase in compensation at that level. So only
how the heck would it be $439?
That's what we said. That was coming up through the system. What happened is the referee made a decision that increased the award from C&E. And that's where he earned his attorney fee. Now, I'm just guessing.
Yeah.
That's where he earned his attorney fee.
Okay. So
he appealed to the board. Yes, that's what I said. That would appear to me on those affirmation cases, that had to be total, and that's why I said it appears low.
Yeah.
Well,
I agree.
Well, I don't represent about to make the comment that, you know, it's not a great deal of money that we're talking about here, but I really would like to find out how much we're doing. Get this kind of information on all those cases, you know, at the at the first hearing, and through the appeal to the board, wherever the attorney enters, I'd like to find out what the disposition is. Not all that specific detailed information that Ted had on these 364 cases.
Essentially, what you want to know is what the average attorney fee is in a successful appeal or in all appeals to the circuit or to the board level.
And also at the hearings level.
Yeah, through the board level.
Yeah, but the separate ones, because not all the ones, of course, you're going to have a different number at the hearing than you are at the appeal to the board, of course.
Yeah.
I'm talking about both.
Yeah. Okay, we'll see what we can get you for that.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, sir.
Well, we're talking about fees. Well, something else comes out here. Who pays when the workman is injured and the decision is made to appeal? And so he goes to his own doctor to
what's the issue that he wants to appeal?
Well, he's appealing what the CNE gave him an award, and he's appealing it now to the referee.
He has to secure some expert medical reports to support his position.
Right.
And he does, and they increase the award on in part on account of those medical reports.
Yes.
Who pays for the attorney, or who pays for the medical reports?
Yeah.
Claimant is expected to pay those expenses out of his award or out of his pocket or whatever as a cost of litigation.
Well, that is not reimbursed.
No.
In that. So that's only the cost of the litigation.
Yeah, if it's simply your... the extent of disability, and he uses medical reports to prove it, as that's his expense, personally.
Thanks, sir.
Okay.
Well, do you want to go ahead with your presentation?
I put it on the board for you over here.
Yeah. That side of the issue. Now, we've got another issue that we deal with in 1050, and that has to do with the board and just what function they play in this. And that becomes fairly simple. If you accept the theory that the Workman's Comp Board sets the policy, that there's a director who's appointed by the governor, either with or without the approval of the board, and that this director then implements the policy through the various divisions. And so that's the extent of that. Mr. Kennedy didn't. He liked the whole process up to that point.
he
really liked that. To do is there's no use going through all the various machinations of getting the amendments drawn if the committee won't support this, and I'm not talking about in total, but in a piece-by-piece basis, or in total. And so that's why I just waited until the committee met.
No, here's the thing, and just let me tell you a reaction to it. First of all, you're putting the circuit court into an appellate review position with a substantial evidence test. I personally do not think that if you would poll the circuit court judges that they would even want to be in that process if they're going to be in that manner. There's no sense having two substantial evidence reviews. The only way that it would seem possible to me, feasible to me, is if you keep this circuit court in a de novo posture as it is presently. On the record, the problem of appeal from the circuit court to the Supreme Court, as you may well remember, there is a bill that
has been signed by the governor already, that has granted the circuit, the Court of Appeals, general appellate jurisdiction. And it's my understanding there will be no cases going directly to the Supreme Court in the state of Oregon. I think they even changed it on mandamus, that it's going to the Court of Appeals now.
I voted against that bill.
Okay.
I think it's
not envisioned that the Supreme Court is going to review cases on issues of substantial evidence. I think that if you're going to do it your way, I think what you're going to have to do to make it feasible, and I think this is where Mr. Kennedy would agree with you, if you would put the circuit court in back in at a de novo on the record as it is presently, and then put the Court of Appeals in as the substantial evidence, and then just have a general review up to the Supreme Court on a writ of review. That's just me, personally, and there are other people who can talk on this. I happen to believe, personally, that if, in fact, you put the Court of Appeals in substantial evidence, you are, in effect, as a practical matter, just about going to eliminate two steps out of the appellate process. Because it will only be probably issues of law that the Court of Appeals will probably end up reversing from the Circuit Court. I seriously doubt that there are very many cases that will ever get to the Supreme Court. As an example today, less than 1% of all the cases appealed to the Supreme Court on a writ of review from the Court of Appeals are accepted. So that's just a general comment on the structure you have. I still think that probably if you would do it the way I just talked about, that's when Mr. Kennedy would be most receptive.
He'd begin smiling.
Yes.
And Carl smiled this way.
Okay.
She doesn't smile all evening.
Okay. Well, what I would like to do is to have some of the people who are interested in this issue be able to comment on that amendment that we have up there, and that's the way it is, and you've heard us discuss it. Mr. Kennedy, you had some amendments, and he has some amendments himself, and I would like to have him bring those up. Well, I appreciate the effort to try to figure this thing out. If you finally come up with one that we all agree on, you're going to get the award this year.
Bothered by the two positions that we were faced with. I didn't like either choice.
You haven't seen mine yet.
Committee members, for the record, I'm Bob Kennedy, representing the Oregon AFL-CIO. When Senator Groner was here, there were some things that I do agree with him on. There are some areas I disagree with him on. But anyway, the Oregon AFL-CIO is not happy with Senate Bill 1050A engrossed.
Do I imply in that that you're not happy with Senator Groner either as it relates to Senate Bill 1050?
No, I'm sticking with my script here. And we have not been too enthusiastic about changing the structure of the Workman's Compensation Board. However, to prove that we are interested in making the Workman's Compensation system more efficient, responsive, and save money for the employers, we have some comments to make about this proposal. And quite frankly, they do come closer to what Representative Rogers has proposed than anything else. Early in the session, I told many of you that we would agree to eliminate a step in the appeals process. And we propose to eliminate the Workman's Compensation Board from the appeals process. The board, because of reviewing cases, has been overloaded with work in the past and unable to give as much attention to administration as they possibly should. And I'm told that there's some consideration in the ways and means with regard to the victim of crime that would add to their workload. By removing the appeals process from the board, as they have been performing, they would then have adequate time to handle the balance of the duties that are theirs at the present time as administrators. With the adoption of this idea, savings are made in the appeals process, and second, you don't add the cost of a director. Quite frankly, they already have a director on staff. If
this changed, the extent of disability claim would go in this manner, and this is what we propose. First, to evaluation division, then directly to hearings division, circuit court de novo, and the court of appeals on substantial evidence, and finally the Supreme Court on a very rare case. For some time after I had first heard that 70% of the cases that are decided by the referees get a raise, I began to think that it would be a good idea for any new evidence to go back to the evaluation division. But if you analyze the problem, it's just not that simple. And this appears to be a two-edged sword. I'm afraid that there would never be any testimony from the claimant, his wife, doctor, neighbor, or anyone else that may have pertinent information to get before a court. And I'm sure that the employers do not want to give up their right to bring in film or experts with other pertinent information and any other evidence they may have to prove their side of the issue. And I find, as proposed by the bill, this only adds another step to the appeals chain, which brings on a delay. Delays cost money. In our estimation, by not adopting the proposed change as to referring to the evaluation division, there's another savings. Then moving to the hearings division, we want these people to remain independent as they are now in their judgments. We feel very strongly that a claimant has the right, if he or she so chooses, to have his day in court before a judge. Therefore, we want the circuit court retained. But changing the law as we proposed, court of appeals on substantial evidence, this I am told the legal counsel, more than a half a step savings in the appeals process. And Mr. Tom Murphy testified before this committee that it was 7/8 of a step savings. It was more expensive to go to the court of appeals, and many of our, and this was already been testified to this evening, and many of our members would not have the funds to proceed to that court. And this is enough reason for labor to oppose losing the circuit court step in the appeals process. The paperwork is more expensive for the court of appeals than the circuit court. And Mr. Larry Gilday's testimony on Senate Bill 1058 engrossed on Friday, May 27th, was excellent and almost exactly the FLCO position, except he was more eloquent than myself. In summary, we propose at least 1.5 steps removed from the appeals process. We have not agreed to adding back in cost items or delays such as hiring a director and a proposed reconsideration of all new evidence through the evaluation division. If our idea is adopted, the employer will save money and the injured worker will not have lost any benefits or rights. And therefore, we respectfully submit the attached amendments which will accomplish our ideas. And Mr. Chairman, I will not run through them. They have been drafted by a legislative council. I would like to make some comments that we would go further as
Let me ask you one question. Were these amendments proposed in the Senate?
Yes, they were. As a matter of fact, Senator Roberts had them drafted by the Legislative Council. And we would propose that one of the three board members be designated as someone that the U.S. legislators or the governor could go to say, we want to know how come so and such was not accomplished, or to, shall we say, possibly be the director. With the three people that you already have, or other folks that might be filling those positions, I think that it's going to take more than one person to keep right herd on the various areas that need watching. We have the new Disability Prevention Center, and I think that someone should spend quite a bit of time up there to really get first-hand information on what is or is not happening. We also have the various other areas, and I think that those could have some very close watching. I listened to testimony this evening by the chairman of the commissioners making a statement when he was asked about something that I felt that if these people had more time, he would have known the answer. He would not have been looking to someone else for that particular answer. The service coordinator program is, I really agree with Representative Rogers on this, and I'm sure that in the Ways and Means Committee they're convinced down there are the same thing. And this is extremely important, and we're sure a good supporter of that. Some of our people feel more secure, whether there might be or might not be an increase in benefits because if they appear before a circuit court judge that they have had some hand in possibly electing, than they would by not having that opportunity. And that's we are concerned for that reason as well. Some other remarks that were made this evening with regard to being concerned about more business coming into this state. I am concerned about more companies locating in this state because I do serve on the Economic Development Commission appointed by the governor. And it is true that every now and then there are employers that are concerned about the business taxes of which workman's compensation is part to operating in this state. Now, talking about, I want to expand a little on delays. And as I understand at the present time, we come up like a sort of like an hourglass situation. You come up to the board and it starts bogging down there. You get past there, then the circuit court is fast. If you want to go on up to the Court of Appeals, you bog down again. And so that's where I think that by our proposal, it would be eliminating some of those delays. Some of you know, and some of you might not know, that there were 12 persons making decisions on our people if they had to go to, well, prior to 1965, they had jury trial. So they had several persons there making the decision. And this was what the position of the Oregon AFL-CIO has been for quite some time. I would say that by looking at the board over there, this is moving closer. The proposal that Representative Rogers has made does move closer to the area of which we are concerned. And with that, Mr. Chairperson, I will complete my remarks unless there are some questions.
He's got some questions of Mr. Kennedy.
My question, Bob, you say that you presented these amendments on the Senate side?
Yes, sir.
Apparently they rejected those amendments, but I mean, what was the main area of objection?
Well, I think that there were some folks over there had their heads made up they were going to go one way, and that's the way they went. That's exactly as it's before you. That I know of. There are some people, well, wait a minute, now you brought up a does jog my memory. There are some, it appears to me that there are a lot of legislators highly concerned about litigation. I'm concerned about litigation as well. That's one of the reasons I'm a high supporter of the service coordinator program. I've been to several conventions, labor conventions, since the session started, since I've found out some of the problems that people are concerned about. I talk with business representatives and I ask them flat out, I said, do you understand how the system works in case you had a member that was injured? The answer is no. I said, okay, then what do you do? And they say, well, we just refer all of our people that have serious injury to XYZ firm of attorneys. With this proposed service coordinator program, as I see it, you will be having a disinterested third party giving advice early on, which is just to tell the person how the system works. And I see that this is a way to cut litigation because there will not be an attorney involved. And you, I don't think any of you like to work for free, or anyway, I sure don't. And so when people start, they're engaged on a case, they're going to remain on the case. And so as far as I'm concerned, I see that as a way to cut the litigation. And I think that the reason that on the other side, there's some people think that the trial attorneys are being paid too much. And there was some talk about that here tonight. You're concerned about what these people do get paid. Well, I'm not an attorney. I know that I do call attorneys now and then to get advice. It takes time. And I don't pay those people. They're not engaged. So the only time they do get paid is when they are on a case that does resolve in something that is gained for the client. So because of that, anyway, that's our position, and I think that that's really the position over on the Senate side, the reason that this came through the way it did.
Thank you, Bob. Is there something else?
I would have one more question. I know it would vary from local to local. What is the practice now where a working person gets injured? That local goes on out and buys the person of their rights and what all is involved. Is that done now?
No, they do not. That's the problem. They do not understand how the system works. They're involved in other grievances, what have you. And there aren't most business representatives aren't involved in that many cases to become or have the expertise to become involved. Anyway, that's the way it appears to me. And the 12 people that I used to supervise a couple of years ago, that was true in their case. And as I say, that's what we did. If a person was seriously injured, why, if they ask us about anything, we just referred them some to a group of attorneys. And they could take their choice. So as I say, this is why I still go back to the service coordinator program. It's extremely important. And I have all the things that have been done. There are a lot of things in the mill. That one single issue is going to save more money in this system than anything else, as far as I'm concerned. And I could be wrong, but I still am.
Okay, let's carry this concept a little bit further. And I know that the assessment of the various locals is always frowned upon. But I would also think it would be possible where the various locals could be assessed, and I don't know, figure maybe 10 cents per member or something like that, so that they could go ahead and have the AFL-CIOs, the parent organization, hire people that could do the very same thing as these service coordinators. I mean, not the same thing, but a similar thing where they could advise the injured workmen of their rights and all and help the process along too.
Well, this doesn't take care of the unrepresented worker. And there are more of those than there are those that are represented by labor organizations. So, you see, when we're here lobbying, we don't lobby just for organized people. We lobby for, quite frankly, there are extremely few number of bills that are geared exactly just for organized labor. We're talking for all workers that may be unfortunate enough to sustain an injury.
Members of the AFL-CIO, I would think this would be a valuable service that they could provide for those injured workmen.
Well, if they want to pay for it, we'd be glad to provide it.
Assessment would be that great.
I don't honestly know. I've never given it any thought. person does have to be, well, here's another thing that you're bringing up another point. And part of the problem of how it happens, let's face it, I sat and listened to all this testimony, and we find that the doctors are not putting in the reports that are complete until you wind up engaging an attorney that has experience in the medical field to take care of those problems. It sure doesn't do you any good to get one that has been doing wills and your general type business. You'd better, if you're going to have a workman's comp problem, you better get somebody that understands medical problems. Just that pure and simple, because they don't. You might as well have done the thing yourself. And I, as a business representative, I served as one for 14 years before coming on to this job, and I didn't know how the system worked, and I'm getting a liberal education for the last year and a half, and I still don't understand it completely. And actually, the chairman would agree with that, because I don't go along with the way he wants to go.
Robert, he's changing his mind. Bill Rogers has changed it for him.
Yes. Representative Rogers is very persuasive to me. Any other questions?
Thank you very much.
John, you want to come up here?
Did you get him to write again?
record, Mr. Chairman, I am Dave Kreiser, and I am a trial attorney. I previously testified in front of this committee on 2658, and I had testimony. I'm not going to again read that and worry whether you have that in front of you. I merely want to say that we support the amendments of Bob Kennedy and the AFL-CIO and have through the Senate. There are a couple of things I'd like to address myself to. There's a couple of comments made in the Senate and by Senator Groner tonight about one of the benefits of this bill is to reduce costs, overall premium costs. And that is, in my opinion, why it was sold in the Senate and why it is attempting to be sold to this committee in the House today. As Representative Rogers pointed out, there hasn't been any substantiation of that. I have never seen any figures set forth by any organized or unorganized group or person.
So if the statistics that I've read the board gave me are true, I don't think that there's any doubt, and I know that, at least for myself, speaking for myself, I never believed that it was a cost saving, and it wasn't argued. And I don't think many of the people were arguing it as a cost saving technique, because the impact is it's minimal, if anything at all, on just the number of cases you have.
Correct. If it isn't a cost factor, then may I ask a question, what is it?
Okay, I think that what the proponents of the bill are saying is that, one, they recognize there must be a change in some way in the administrative structure of the workers' compensation system. Now, it's obvious from talking to what Mr. Kennedy said, he recognizes that there's too many steps in the appeals process. Now, there's also seems to be a problem in the administration of the department, and the reason is not necessarily because of the board, it's because of the statute, the legislature adding numerous functions to the board over the last 5, 6, 7, 8 years. So I think what it is a reflection of is the recognition, the same as Mr. Kennedy, that the appeals process has to be reorganized and restructured to be more efficient. Not cost-saving, but efficient. And I think that what is a reflection, because he's just saying that he agrees that something has to be done, but he's just picking a different step. So that's what the thrust of the bill was, and I don't think anybody was arguing that it was going to necessarily save money.
Well, contrary to that, that's what Senator Groner testified to in front of this committee tonight, and that's what has been said in the Senate.
I think that what Dick is talking about is not the actual out-of-dollar savings right now. I think he's talking about indirect costs on a more efficient system, and it isn't in the next 2 years. It may be 4 to 6 years, because I don't think that there's anyone here that thinks that this session is going to be the last of a major look and review and reform, possibly, the workers' compensation system, because I think most of us recognize they're going to be back in 2 more years. Now, you know that as well as I do.
That's probably true, and I'm glad that you cleared up this cost factor, because now you can talk about the real issue involved in this.
That's not
a lot of side issues. If you're going to streamline the appeals process, why is the insurance groups insistent upon taking out the circuit court? The only purpose of that is to allow an administrative agency to be the last say-so in all questions, particularly questions of fact. This diagram here, Representative Rogers' proposal, was close except for that substantial evidence to the circuit court. Now, Bob Kennedy alluded to this. In 65, you had a jury trial. You had 12 people deciding the facts of every case. 12 people. With this proposal, you have one. You have the referee deciding facts in every case. That man is going to make mistakes. He has to. He's human. There is no way under that system to correct that mistake. If you go to de novo in the circuit court, that circuit judge can correct that factual mistake. If you go to substantial evidence, he cannot. This is why we object, and this is why labor objects. There is no way for that workman to correct honest mistakes of fact if you go substantial evidence to the circuit court. And that's our objection.
Mr. Chair.
Yes, Dan.
I've a lot of these letters that I've received, I imagine the same with Bill and everybody else, contain the statement that you just made, and I don't recall hearing any testimony in here to that effect. I've missed some of the meetings, however. if they want the circuit court out, except maybe Al Riebel down there. I mean, really, I don't know where this is coming from, but I'm really suspicious that the letters that I'm getting, you know, that seed has been planted in the minds of those people that are writing the letters, because I'm hearing it from them, and I'm hearing it from you, but I sit on the committee and I'm not hearing it from the witnesses.
Well, I assume that AOI represents insurance companies. I assume Roy Green, who is, as I understand, Vice President of EBI, is
in Roy Green is involved in the insurance business.
Certainly.
True.
Dave, would a better choice
is that one?
Get this. Would a better choice of words been employers rather than insurance companies?
For both, frankly.
Very well.
It's both.
Employers, no doubt. You know, but I'm wondering whether it's, see, the lawyers I'm getting are saying insurance, having words in like insurance company ripoffs, insurance company pressure on the legislature. You know, they're identifying the insurance companies.
Who is they? Who are you speaking of? The letters you get?
Yes, the letters that I'm receiving from my folks at home.
That's because they deal with the insurance company and not with the employer.
Well, I
through the system.
You know, I've gotten a number of letters, and they all say the same identical thing. Now, somebody has supplied them with a copy, or we've got an awful lot of people out here that have mental telepathy and are all just catching on to the exact same words. Now, it's obvious that somebody's organized a campaign to send the letters. Now, I'm not critical of that because that's the legislative process. I understand that. But what Gary's talking about is there's an allegation that the insurance companies are the ones pushing this. And if that's true, I want to know about it because I am interested in that aspect. And I have to agree with him. I haven't heard anyone here come up and identify this proposal to eliminate the circuit court as the appeal process as the insurance companies. If you want to say it's the employers and the employer groups that are pushing it, I agree with it. Because that,
frankly, doesn't make any difference to me whether you call it insurance companies or employers. I don't care who does it. I don't think it's right.
Okay.
Simple as that. The statistics that you read, Mr. Chairman, graphically point out what I'm talking about. There were several of those cases that you went through, that you itemized one through whatever. You can see where the referee granted a permanent total award. The Workman's Compensation Board took that award away, and the workman had to go to circuit court to get it back. If you have this proposal, substantial evidence, the circuit court cannot give it back. He is bound by those facts.
Now, Dave, don't get me going, because what's going to happen, I've got the appeal record. I didn't know I had it, and I can show you the number of appeals that the Court of Appeals took away the award of permanent total by the circuit court.
Sure, there's some.
Mr. Chairman, on that particular issue, several of those you read off where the board gave a lesser award or reduced the award what the referee had given. And so, therefore, there would have been nothing for the workman to appeal. Because he would have had his permanent total at the referee level.
I'm sorry, I missed the first part.
No, a number of those cases, the referee awarded a permanent total. The board dropped it in one case to 30 degrees.
And in one case to zero.
And the circuit court reversed it.
Right.
If the board had not been in it, and if the circuit court had been in there on a substantial evidence basis only, it wouldn't have mattered because it would not have gotten to the circuit court unless the insurer or the employer appealed it.
Correct. If not,
and so,
took the board out.
Well, and the circuit court on the substantial evidence, they would have never heard it.
Mm-hmm. But the point I'm trying to make, you see, is when you're talking about it, it's very easy to sit here and talk in nice words about a permanent total case. But I really wish each one of you would have the opportunity of sitting in a full-blown hearing and listen to the evidence propounded by both sides, and you'll see that it is not a very easy thing to decide. Mr. Kulongowski knows that. He's been involved in it. It's a very difficult question to decide, and it isn't easy. I was a referee. I went through it for 2 years.
Can I interject a thought?
Yeah.
I wish you'd go back and retract when you said that it's very easy to sit here. Now, I've never sat where you sat in the courtroom, but I don't know that you've ever sat up here either. But I'll tell you one thing, it ain't easy. I've been at it 6 years, and it damn sure is not easy to sit here and try to make decisions on what Mustafa says.
I appreciate it. What I'm trying to convey is that it's difficult. What I'm really is agreeing with is difficult for you to see what I'm trying to tell you, and it's difficult to surmise it unless you've been there. I think you can appreciate that.
Yeah, I'd like to go there.
Right, I think it would be very educational for everybody. And what I'm getting at is if you sit in a hearing and you see an insurance company attorney putting on evidence against the workman, the claims attorney putting on evidence for him, that you have a very serious question of fact in many cases. And to have one individual, one, have the final say in every case according to that workman, and to dictate to him for the rest of his life, is a very serious thing. That's all I'm saying. It's borne out by these statistics, how courts and the board and the referee all disagree at times, because it is a very difficult thing to decide. And what I am saying, as far as the workman is concerned, if you go this way with substantial evidence, you're allowing one man to have the final say in all factual issues, and I don't think that's proper. When in 65, they had 12 people in a jury doing that.
Terry, let me ask you this. If you put the board in place of the circuit court up there and substitute the Court of Appeals for the Supreme Court, would your position be the same then? If the circuit court, if the referee had the de novo and then the board had it on the substantial evidence? In other words, it's the hearing, it's the referee making the decision.
But you're still at the same spot. You're still a substantial evidence from the referee, and there's no review of the facts.
You feel more comfortable that way than you would with the circuit court?
No. No. And that brings up another point, which I previously testified to. If you keep everything within the administrative system, and by everything I mean policy decisions, questions of fact, determinations of issues of disability, that lends itself, in my opinion, to abuse. You have to have a check and balance. That's what the circuit court provides today, is a check and balance. Now, I previously testified earlier on 2658 concerning the distinction between disabling and non-disabling claims, where because of the policy of the board, at that particular point in time, over 300,000 workmen were not notified that their claims were closed because of the policy that said if a man cuts his finger and has no time loss and there's only a medical bill, you don't notify him what claim is closed and that he can appeal that if his finger is bent over. They just stamped his file and shoved it away. That, in my opinion, and ultimately in the court's opinion, was contrary to the statute. You must notify every workman that his claim has been closed, and he has a right to contest it if he disagrees. I took a case to the circuit court. The board on appeal said, we're not going to do that. We are going to keep closing claims that way because it's impractical and too costly. Even though there's 300,000 workmen at this point that have not been notified. The circuit court disagreed and said, we don't care whether it's costly or not. The legislature has said, you shall notify each workman. Now, that's the kind of check and balance I'm talking about. Now, granted, on this proposal, you could do that because that's a question of law. And the circuit court could still rectify that under Representative Rogers' proposal. But if you eliminate the circuit court and leave the board there, you do not have that real efficient method of check and balance. You can go to the Court of Appeals, but as everybody has testified to, that's costly to the workmen. Many cases on questions of law would not be brought up because of cost. That, to me, is the important thing about circuit court. It's a check and balance on the administrative system. You're talking about a number of cases, as the staff showed. They're very, very minor compared to the number of cases. Now, I don't think it's worth giving up the check and balance to the workmen for the sake of a few cases.
Now we're down to, I think, what the issues are, because I think you and I are thinking the same way, is trying to analyze the thing. You've come up with one issue. This is checks and balance. Would you agree with me that that's what we're really talking about?
I am.
I mean that's the real issue.
That's what bothers me, yes. I don't want to run away.
You would agree that the cost and the number of cases, it isn't that great of an impact.
Correct.
Now, just for the folk
committee on that one issue alone, could you restate your position on checks and balance? Why you think that that is important rather than having the board there?
I hope I can.
Go ahead.
Well, that one example was the most graphic example I can give you, is that the board has policy powers, as you know. They can set policy in all areas of workers' compensation. They can set an administrative policy to tell a referee, as they did to me in those particular kinds of cases, this shall be done. If you do not have the circuit court there to say to the board, you are making a policy that is contrary to statute, then what check and balance are you going to have with that agency? What protection is the workman going to have? And that's it simply.
Okay. Dave, let me ask you, what distinguishes the workman's compensation system than any other administrative procedure that in which there's an administrative review in other systems, whether it's unemployment, whether it's employment relations, just a multitude?
Well, very, very simply, as I think Bill Mashofsky testified to last hearing in answer to that very question. Unemployment, you're talking about a very closed period of time in a man's life. What is it, 52 weeks? You people know whatever it is. Workman's compensation, you're talking about a man's lifetime, his livelihood, his entire future. It is not a very singular, simple little issue to summarily dismiss. You have an injured man who has a family, who has kids, who the outcome of his particular case is going to determine his entire future, and it's as simple as that, and it's a very staggering responsibility. And your other administrative agencies deal with, as far as I'm concerned, much lesser problem. Also, you're in this particular situation, as I said, you're dealing with a personal injury. You're not dealing with an administrative entitlement to a benefit. You're dealing with a personal injury. You're dealing with a man's life, his future livelihood, and that, to me, is the greatest distinction in the world.
Any questions of Dave on this one aspect of 1050 of the bill? I want to talk about the other main feature of the bill, the establishment of the position of director. Do you have any testimony on that particular aspect of 1050?
Other than what I gave before, very honestly, it bothers me. It really bothers me. It would tend to politicize, in my opinion, the Workman's Compensation Board. And again, for the same reasons that I just gave, I'm fearful of politicizing because of the policy power that director has. Now, if you, Representative Rogers,